Has anyone watched the TV show Succession? It's about this very rich and very dysfunctional family, the Roy family, who run this big media and entertainment empire. The head of the family, a tyrant named Logan Roy, founded and grew this empire. But now, as he approaches his 80th birthday, his health is starting to fail him. And his adult children are kind of waiting to see which one of them will be named as his successor. They think that money is the key to happiness, and they have access to so much: beautiful homes, traveling the world, getting whatever they want. And yet, there is this hollowness to it all. Actually, deep down, they just long for their dad's approval and love, but that seems elusive. And even though at first you think these people are terrible and so far removed from our lives, you begin to have empathy for them. Because even though their struggles might be heightened, I think most of us know something of being formed in dysfunctional families and communities. We internalize a lot from our closest relationships about what the world is like and what type of people we need to be. And a lot of us can carry scars and hurts of people letting us down, and in turn, we let others down. We have this longing to be loved, but we're not always sure how to make that longing a reality. It's not something you can buy, though we can try and throw money at it. I want to suggest that our characters are shaped by the people who are closest to us. And God knows this. God knows that character transformation doesn't happen in isolation. It happens in relationship with others. This is what Jesus is doing. Jesus is giving this great Sermon on the Mount, and he begins by calling people to receive God's grace, to come into relationship with God, and then join this new community he's forming. He then teaches this community how they are to live, what type of people they are to be. Drawing on the Torah, he goes underneath the rules to what changes need to take place at an internal level. We all have a lot of baggage, internalizing some not so helpful things that we might need to let go of. We looked at one big area last week, anger, and how being stuck in a cycle of anger can potentially break relationships. And now Jesus tackles three more areas, and they're all centered on some of our closest relationships. Now, there's a lot we could say about these three areas that Jesus tackles, and I won't be saying everything I can. I encourage you to dig deeper as a home group, in community, into these things, because there are some very profound and life-changing practices here. But let me give you an overview. Jesus begins with marriage. Marriage, for most people, is one of the closest relationships we will have, and yet it can seem unstable in our culture. One of the characters in Succession, the daughter Shiv, while planning her wedding, is also having an affair on the side. And then on her wedding night, she ends up telling her husband and encouraging him to have affairs as well. She says, "Let's be modern and cool about sleeping around." And her husband tries, but he struggles. He loves her, but she doesn't seem to love him in the same way. There is this atmosphere of distrust and unhappiness that develops in their marriage. Shiv seems incapable of showing love. She's been formed only to care for herself. In contrast, marriage, as presented in the Torah, is a relationship that is highly valued and stable. A good marriage relationship reflects something of God's relationship to Israel. God had made promises to be faithful, had entered into a covenant with them. Likewise, marriage was to be a covenant, an intimate relationship where people could practice the habits of love and long-term commitment. And sex had a key role to play in that relationship. David Gushee, writing on sexual ethics and the Sermon on the Mount, shares how his understanding of sex has changed, saying, "The more I matured, the more sex became a question of bonding and not only rules. Rules were still important, but they began to be understood in the deeper context of bonding, with mutual trust and mutual support." This is what marriage is meant to be, and one of the ways that trust is expressed is through sex. Sexual faithfulness is important. There are rules, but they're meant to help produce a relationship where trust is foundational. So the Ten Commandments state, do not commit adultery. Now, adultery in that context meant do not have sex with someone else's spouse. Christians have tended to extend the definition of adultery to do not have sex with someone who isn't your husband or wife. Jesus affirms the Torah's teaching. It is simple enough to follow. Such a rule helps protect the marriage relationship. But then Jesus digs into the internal reasoning behind the rule. And he says this, Matthew 5:28. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If it is true that our characters are formed in how we relate to one another, then we need to know what is happening internally. How are we seeing those around us and then connecting with them? Jesus identifies lust as something that has the potential to undo and damage others, and maybe ourselves as well. Now, similar to anger, there can be a lot of confusion and guilt here, particularly for men, who Jesus is primarily addressing when he says anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has committed adultery. But the emphasis here is on intent, not just glancing and noticing that someone is attractive, but when you make the decision to not redirect, but to keep looking, to dwell and desire and fantasize, to keep coming back in your mind, you enter this cycle that leads you away from the person you've committed to and potentially towards actually having an affair with someone else. Now, of course, it's not just men who can desire and fantasize. Women do as well. Sexual desire is part of human nature, and it is a good desire. Remember the Song of Songs? Look back and read the Song of Songs. It is a good desire. But kind of like anger, it is powerful. And if we're not careful, lust can turn our hearts away from those we've committed ourselves to and end up destroying relationships. So, what can we do? Jesus says, Matthew 5:29, if your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Now, I don't see any missing eyes or limbs here. So either this is something that nobody struggles with, or we recognize that Jesus is not speaking literally here. Some Christians have tried to take this literally, only to discover that the struggle is internal. Jesus is using such strong and dramatic language to shake people up and get them to realize that what they need to do is stop, look away, don't touch, don't linger, flee, pay attention to what your eye is drawn to, and then make the changes you need to make. And you might need to make some drastic changes. So do it. Especially in our world. We live in a culture where pornography is everywhere and widely available. There are sexualized images all around us, making it very difficult. We need to be intentional about safeguarding our hearts and our minds. There's a responsibility here. Now, there's no one rule for every person. I think this is something you need to work out. And you might need to talk about it with your partner or with a trusted friend. You should do that. But don't do nothing. Don't do nothing. This is important because lust has a way of reducing people into objects, reducing our relationships. It could leave us feeling hollow. As a community, we want to protect and help marriages to flourish because we believe that this is good. These type of relationships are good. Along similar lines, Jesus then addresses divorce. Marriage is considered really important, but the Torah did make room for the possibility of divorce. You can read about it in Deuteronomy 24. And again, the focus is on the man here, because in the ancient world, it was men who tended to have the power to be able to divorce, which could put women in a vulnerable situation. One of the provisions that the Torah provides that Jesus affirms is that the man must give his wife a certificate of divorce. Without that, her chances of getting remarried was pretty much non-existent. There's lots of debate happening in Jesus' day on what grounds you could have for divorce. Some allowed divorce for very petty reasons, like my wife didn't make me the dinner that I wanted, but others were stricter. And if anything, the situation for women was getting worse. We would say that divorce is even more normal today. You see this modelled in succession. The father is with his third wife, he has children from different marriages, the eldest son who doesn't work for the business but just enjoys his luxurious life and whatever hobbies he takes up, Conor Roy, has to buy an escort to be his partner. The next son, Kendall Roy, the one most likely at first to be the successor, is divorced and struggles with a drug addiction. He hardly ever sees his kids. All these relationships seem unstable. There is an atmosphere of distrust, a habit of moving on from people, or being unable to work things out. This is what is modelled and passed down. Jesus, in contrast, does not think divorce should be the norm. He comes down hard, saying Matthew 5:32, "But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, makes her the victim of adultery, and anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery." I think Jesus doesn't really want to get into a debate on what grounds can someone get a divorce. What Jesus wants to emphasize, and again, the language is quite strong here, but what Jesus wants to emphasize and champion is the importance of the marriage relationship. It is a serious commitment we are making. And a divorce is a breakdown, a significant breakdown in that relationship. Sexual immorality significantly breaks down that relationship. But that's not the way it's supposed to be. Divorce is so common nowadays, it seems almost unremarkable. And I understand that sometimes the only option we might have left is divorce. But it's still so sad when it comes to that. And I think we should feel sad. Jesus calls on his community of disciples to remember what marriage is meant to be. We are created to be in relationship. Committed relationships, so we practice and learn how to love and be faithful. Breakdowns and divorce don't just affect the couple, but the effects ripple out. Children of divorced parents might be a little less trusting and reluctant to enter marriage. The potential cycle I think Jesus is concerned about here is that divorce and remarriage can create a culture where it's a little bit harder to trust. You know, each time we break up and start again with someone else, it's a little bit harder to trust. A little bit harder to be faithful. Our relationships become a little bit more fragile and unstable. From talking about marriage, for many, their most intimate relationship, Jesus suddenly gets broader to talk about truth. But again, it's all about how we relate to one another. It is in how we relate to one another that our character is formed. Jesus begins by picking up on the fact that in the Torah there are instructions around oaths. It was important that you kept your oath. There are all different types of oaths you can make, but the point of an oath is that you kept your word. Again, faithfulness is important. It is how relationships can grow, how societies can flourish, where there is trust and truth and commitment. But in Jesus' day, people were perverting oaths. Rabbis were creating lots of loopholes and different types of oaths, helping people get out of their commitments. Oaths were becoming kind of meaningless. And so Jesus says, Matthew 5:34, "But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot even make one hair white or black. All you need to simply say is yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Truth and a commitment to your word is even more in danger today, whether that's in our families or in the wider world. In Succession, the father, Logan Roy, doesn't want to give up his power, so he makes lots of promises to his children and he constantly breaks his word. He says one thing to them privately and another thing publicly. He promises each one, yes, you will be my successor. And this creates an atmosphere of distrust. Logan seems incapable of showing them any love and has raised them not to take people at their word. So they are formed to care only for themselves. It's all about self-preservation. The children backstab and make plans to bring their father or each other down. But we actually need one another. We need to create an atmosphere of trust. So Jesus says, let everything you say be true. Not just when you take the right oath, say the right words, but all the time. Be a person who does what they say they will do. Be someone that is reliable. When we practice honesty, we are building trust in our relationships right across society in all areas of life, family, church, work, neighborhoods. Now, none of this is natural or easy. We live in a rich and dysfunctional society. Succession beautifully captures the type of families and businesses and communities we can find ourselves in. We are used to pursuing simply what I want. We are used to people letting us down. There are broken promises and commitments all around us. We get used to it. Sometimes those closest to us have trouble expressing love. We learn, I think, each one to a degree to be a little wary of others. Stories are everywhere of friends we know having affairs, another couple heading to divorce, someone struggling with pornography, people unhappy in their marriages, people lonely, friends not keeping their word, people unable to commit to anything or anyone. We internalize and learn to kind of survive in such a world, even though we long to be in relationships where there is love and deep trust and faithfulness. Jesus calls us to hold on to that longing and pursue it. Trust that it is possible because God loves. God is committed to us. God is faithful and trustworthy, and God's Spirit is working in our hearts and in our relationships. We can learn and practice and be committed to being people who relate well to one another, who prioritize our closest relationships. He learned to be careful with what we look at and what we say. And as we do so, bit by bit, we are creating a place that is a little bit more stable, which makes it a little bit easier to trust and to be faithful and to feel secure because we know we are loved. And always we return to this. God loves. God is faithful. God is committed to us.